From the land to Grand Hyatt University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 14th day of February 2022. It was a volatile day in Chicago. We'll talk about the numbers with Kurt Kimmel, a broader perspective with Frayne Olson, and the weather forecast with Mark Russo, all on this Monday edition of the closing market report from Illinois Public Medium, public radio for the farming world, the place that you can also sign up for our spring outlook with the Farm Doc team. It's at the Beef House on Tuesday, the 8th day of March. The cost is $25. Tickets available right now at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn today at 655 and three quarters, 4 3/4 higher. December up 3.5 at $5.98.5. March beans down 13, $15.70, the settlement price, but the range from about $15.50 to $16 even. That was a big range, and they were much higher in the overnight trade. Soybeans in the November at 14.42, down a penny and a half. Bean meal 8.20 lower. The bean oil down, or rather up 9 cents. Wheat futures a penny and a half higher. In the soft red at $7.99.25, the hard red up 4.25 at $8.28.5. Live cattle futures finished the nearby contract at $146.35, up 17.5 cents. Feeders were up 65. Lean hogs a dime higher on the day. Here to help us make some sense of what happened in Chicago in the overnight and the day trade is Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Kurt, you watched it, I know. What did you think of it?
Oh, boy, what a roller coaster. And that reminds me, I need to send everyone a picture of Dan and Teresa's Wicker on a roller coaster. It's back in the mid-90s, top producer. And the thing about this picture is Teresa's having fun, but Dan's about to lose it. Because they had to ride that thing 6 times to get the perfect picture for that article on the roller coaster markets back then. So crazy, crazy. And today's another roller coaster, just like last week. 70-cent range there last week, a good 40, almost 50-cent trading range in the beans here from last night, this morning, to this afternoon. Basically, just looking at a little strength early on uncertainty, a little weather. Then as the night went on, the 11 to 15-day forecast showed a little better chance of moisture for southern Brazil and into Argentina, but kind of hit and miss. No new sales announced this morning, so that kind of limited the buying and kind of put the heat on the market. And beans went below the previous week's low, and that generated chart-based selling. We were able to close it back above that low, which is constructive, so today's lows are going to be significant. On the Ukrainian-Russian front, you know, more cat and mouse back and forth. Somebody came out, I don't know if the administration said that they would invade Ukraine on Wednesday. And that makes perfect sense. For you non-believers out there, there's a full moon Wednesday. In fact, that full moon's at 10:56 a.m. Now, I don't know if that's Central or Eastern time, but the administration or somebody's probably looking at the full moon, and that came out of the woodwork. But as we went into the close today to push fast forward here, we were able to recover somewhat. And part of that news is yet to be determined. Really didn't hear anything solid other than the Kremlin was looking at maybe a diplomatic solution to this Ukrainian-Russian situation. So it's touchy. It's going to flip-flop back and forth. Hopefully, we'll see some peaceful resolutions to it. Also added some support this morning from the fact that the export inspections report, corn at the upper end of trade expectations. The soybeans was within trade expectations, over a million metric tons being shipped out last week. So we're shipping what we're selling. And no new daily sales, but they're still continuing to talk that COFCO bought some U.S. corn. And in the reporting system on that, there's ideas that they don't need to have to report that till that's about ready to ship. So even though they're buying it, that might not be announced for a little while on that. Other positive news, price-wise, record high palm oil values. This world vegetable oil market remains on fire. And the other part of the crush is the meal. We're seeing a situation where maybe tomorrow's NOPA crush report for the month of January could show the monthly crush in January as high as about 186.6 million bushels being crushed. So we'll see what that says tomorrow. I believe that comes out about 11 a.m. So you know, a little bullish news, a little bearish news, just kind of all gelled together, giving us some choppy, volatile trade. One more little piece of information, Brazil. Agriel came out, Brazil, showing them about 25% harvested versus 16% harvested last week and 9% a year ago. So those beans are being harvested, even though it's wet in that northern regions there, Todd.
And so I'm wondering today, you mentioned that the low in the soybeans would be important. It's also an outside down day last week. CONAB, USDA's counterpart in Brazil, gave us 125 million metric ton number for the size of that crop. Many think that might be as small a number as we actually see from either agency. If things are settled in Ukraine and Russia diplomatically, would this put a top in the marketplace, do you think?
Well, I think it'd take off the concern, particularly in the feed grain side of it, on the stuff coming out of that region as far as shipping. And also, too, a little longer term from the standpoint that that's awful fertile farm ground in that area there. So I don't know what extremes Russia would take as far as invading Ukraine. We don't want to see that. But taking that pressure off, I think, would definitely ease the world wheat corn situation for the most part. We need to make sure they come to some type of agreement or settlement, because there's a lot of moving parts in this whole situation. There's energy going into Europe. There's those gas lines. Man, there's just a ton of different things to look at. There's grain. There's Chinese investments inside of Ukraine there that need to be protected, too. So it's quite a story. It's going to take probably another few weeks to unfold yet.
Hey, thanks so much.
You bet.
Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities. He's in Normal, Illinois. Each Monday, we talk to a land-grant university agricultural economist here at willag.org. We're now joined by Frayne Olson, agricultural economist for North Dakota State University Extension. Frayne, thank you for being with us today.
Oh, always great to visit.
I want to know, in your part of the world, as we head towards the end of March, and USDA has to, at some point here, take a survey of producers about their expected acreage allocations, what you think North Dakota, and since you're there in Fargo, Minnesota, maybe northern Minnesota farmers will do as it relates to the acreage mix for the year?
You know, it's a great question, because I've been traveling quite a bit this last winter, doing a lot of meetings, talking to a lot of different farmers with very different perspectives, to be very honest with you, on what they're going to plant and what kind of the priorities are. When you get into kind of the eastern portion of North Dakota, as well as into western Minnesota, you know, we pick up a lot more corn, a lot more soybeans. As you get closer to the Canadian border, there's a lot more canola. And then as you get towards the west, kind of central North Dakota and west and into Montana, of course, you pick up a lot more spring wheat, some durum, as well as a lot of the pulse crops. So, you know, questions about fertilizer. Cost of fertilizer, will that really swing acres? Will that really change the acreage mix? Recognizing that at least for spring wheat up here, spring wheat and canola and corn are all pretty heavy fertilizer users, both N and P. So will it really change the relative mix? One of the consistencies I've been hearing is we're probably looking at more soybean acres. Part of it because of fertilizer. But just when you look at relative prices, you look at cost of productions, you look at the bottom line, soybeans is a real, you know, is a real hot topic. Canola, because of the extremely high canola prices we have right now, both canola and oilseed sunflower, if you can grow those and have really good yields, primarily in the kind of, again, closer to the Canadian border, canola is a slam dunk. I mean, there's going to be more canola acres, both in the U.S. as well as on the Canadian prairies. The one the crop that kind of keeps swinging back and forth that we're watching, at least I'm watching pretty closely, is spring wheat acres. Because typically, as you go through the crop budgets, as you look at what profitability is, your bottom line numbers, spring wheat is one of those that's kind of towards the tail end or lower end of the profit margins and still have good profit margins. The net income is still good, but it just doesn't quite stack up as well as some of the other crops that we're looking at, especially because of these smaller market crops that we grow up here. So, the acreage battle isn't really settled yet, and it will be very interesting, in my opinion, to see kind of what comes out of that March 31 planting intentions report, because there's still some farmers that are on the bubble on exactly how many acres of which crop they're going to grow.
Here in Illinois, the average grain size farm in the farm business farm management records is 1,500 acres. In North Dakota, parts of Minnesota, what's the average size of a farm?
Yeah, so we're probably looking at 2,500, 3,000 would be 2,500 would be probably pretty average for the region. As you get further west, it's going to get a bit larger. As you get east, it'll probably, the average will drop off a little bit because of some of the specialty crops, in particular the really high value crops like sugarcane and potatoes. Those are very intensive crops to grow, and the crop farm sizes tend to be a little bit smaller. But I would say on average, probably 2,500 acres would be very typical. And again, depending upon the crop mix, you know, we get some diversity both north and south in the state, as well as east and west in the state, because of combination of weather conditions as well as soil types. So our big corn and soybean area, of course, would be in the southeast portion of the state near the corner of Minnesota and South Dakota. Usually what I explain is if you like drop a pebble in a pond, you see the ripple effects going out. If you drop the pebble in that southeast corner of North Dakota and looked at the ripple, the corn ripple dies out a little faster. The soybean ripple carries a little bit further, both north and west. So the three big crops we have by acreage, spring wheat and soybeans are very close to, in a normal year, very close to the same acreage. And then corn being kind of a distant third. And the fourth largest by acreage would be canola. So we also grow quite a bit of durum in the state, not very much winter wheat. So when we look at all wheat acres, all blended together, wheat tends to be our largest crop by acreage. But if you look specifically by class, spring wheat and soybeans are very similar.
So I asked the acreage question for a specific reason. We're starting to hear some whispers that larger farms, and I'm thinking 2,500 acres and better, probably in the state of Illinois, parts of Iowa, Indiana, sort of that primary corn belt, might lean more heavily towards corn. I'm wondering if you feel one crop or another for the larger farms, something above 4,500 acres in your part of the world.
That there is some correlation or some relationship with farm size, but actually what I have seen is much more about the location, geographic location, and your ability to produce what the yield potential is for different crops. And again, we're getting a bit far, north and west for really high bushel corn. Down again in that southeast corner, it looks like Iowa or Illinois. We got a lot of corn and soybeans, very little wheat. Average corn yields for some of those areas are for the farm averages are often 200 bushels plus. So we can do good corn in particular areas. But again, as you get further north and further west, we get rainfall starts to drop off a little bit. The soil types start to change. And that's where we continue to have some of the spring wheat, because on the land that does have some lighter soil texture to it, spring wheat is usually harvested in August and September. So it's much more mature earlier on. It is able to capture some of those early spring season rains, versus if you're going to grow corn and beans, you need to have a really good August rain shower to make those crops fill out and to get the kind of yields. And so our August rains, especially again as you get a little bit further west, become a bit more sporadic. Sometimes you get them, and sometimes you don't.
Finally, I'd be amiss if I didn't ask you about the marketplace. There are traders that are talking $17, $18, $19, and $20 beans, much higher priced corn. What are your thoughts?
So I guess, you know, we're obviously at some really good price levels right now, both for old crop and new crop. I don't think we're going to, my personal opinion, I don't think we're going to get to quite those levels, because it's not only the supply side, and of course, we've got, all eyes are on Brazil and Argentina now, but we also have the demand base. And even though there's still good, strong demand coming out of Asia, in particular China, you know, they haven't rebuilt their hog herd as aggressively as they have in the past. And so the feed demand, the total feed demand is still very strong, but not, I think, as aggressive as what we've seen over the last several years. So I don't know that we're going to get quite to those, you know, 17, maybe 17, but $18 to $19, I think is going to be really tough. We'd have to have something exceptionally unusual happen for that to take place. So it's a supply side. I know everybody's got that in the brain right now, but we also have to think about the demand and who's going to be willing to pay those kinds of prices as either domestic crusher, which again, margins are very good right now, but more importantly, that export market on the international stage, who as an exporter or as an international buyer is going to be looking at saying those prices are really good. I need to buy some more because by the time you add in basis for delivery to an international buyer, you can often add $1.50 to $2 onto the futures market. And that starts to get be some very, very expensive soybeans.
Speaking of exporters, Ukraine, number 4 in the export of corn, and Russia, high, I don't remember how high up in the export of wheat, but one of the largest on the planet.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So from the wheat's perspective, and I want to talk now specifically more about, you know, the winter wheat classes. But if you look at all wheat, Russia is the largest wheat exporter by volume. Ukraine is the third largest exporter by volume. So when we talk about the political tensions and potential military conflict between Russia and Ukraine, that's something obviously the wheat market is watching exceptionally close. But the corn market is also paying attention because, as you noted, Ukraine is the fourth largest corn exporter. You know, the volumes are about half of what we export in the U.S., but those are still very significant. And so they're number 4. Number 2 and 3 kind of flip between Brazil and Argentina. And, of course, there's some concern and uncertainty about how big their crops are going to be and their ability to also supply the export market. So politically, when we look at what's happening in the conflict between Russia and Ukraine, the corn market is also watching that. There are some military maneuvers going on right now, including some in the Black Sea itself, where there's some naval war games going on. And there is some concern that's going to restrict commercial trade, not only for grains, but also for petroleum products, because Russia is the second largest crude oil exporter right behind Saudi Arabia, and they're the largest natural gas exporter. So this isn't just a grains play, but it's also an energy play. And so markets are a little jittery and jumpy right now.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Always a pleasure to visit, and I'm looking forward to our next call.
Indeed. That is Frayn Olson. He is an agricultural economist at North Dakota State University Extension. He joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org, willag.org, or just search out the Closing Market Report in your favorite podcast application. While you're on your website, why don't you pick up your tickets for our Spring Outlook in conjunction with the Farm Doc team. The Agricultural Economist and I will be at the Beef House on the 8th day of March. That's a Tuesday. The cost for the event is just $25. And not only will the Ag Economist and myself be there, but more importantly, you'll also be able to meet, talk to, listen to as well, panel discussions about the corn and soybean markets with the Will Ag panelists that you hear each and every business day right here on the radio at Illinois Public Media. You can get your tickets online right now at willag.org. Now let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Mark Russo is here from Everstream Analytics. Good afternoon to you, Mark.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Can you tell me about the weather in South America?
Yeah, looking ahead here across South America, for the remainder of February, we see drier than normal conditions in Argentina, southern Brazil, and Paraguay. So the areas that have already been struggling with dryness this season, that looks to continue here with no significant relief expected over the next 2 weeks. Now, as for temperatures, there will be a little bit of heat accompanying the drier than normal pattern. Actually, much of the heat is here in the short term. It's the next 3 days in Argentina and then the next 4 to 5 days in southern Brazil and Paraguay. But then temperatures do look to ease a bit over the weekend, and then no sign of any heat returning. So in one sense, it could be a lot worse for those dry areas. This could be another extreme heat wave, but they will have a few days of heat, but just, you know, obviously not to the magnitude and duration of what occurred back a month ago.
What are you watching in the United States?
Yeah, we're watching the continued drier than normal pattern across the Plains Hard Red Belt. Now, the pattern's not totally dry. There are some opportunities for some precipitation here coming up, some rain and snow in portions of the southern plains. However, those opportunities do look very, very minor. One system is coming through the middle portion of this week. A second is expected about a week later, but it looks to actually both systems look to produce just again very spotty light activity across the Plains Hard Red Belt. And again, that bottom line is that there's no meaningful precip expected or enough to turn around the situation there.
Do either of those systems pick up enough precipitation eventually that they'll make things difficult in the middle part of the country?
In a few smaller scale areas, yes. So this kind of combination of precipitation, although we're not seeing any kind of major snow or ice event, but there will be at least, you know, a swath of snow and some ice, and combined with then some heavier precipitation, which occurring over some of the frozen ground in areas and snow cover in portions of the Midwest, that could result in some kind of localized flooding issues here. So, all in all, kind of a moderate system coming through. It doesn't look like a big late winter type of storm, but could, again, cause some impacts here on a local basis.
Anything else of note to cover?
At this time, we're also watching very stormy conditions in areas of actually northern Europe. And so that's actually going to help improve some of the dryness in the UK and France to help their wheat crop. But then those very windy conditions are going to disrupt crop transportation, and including in and around some of the ports, including the key port of Rotterdam.
Thanks, Mark.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Everstream Analytics. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Medium. Online at willag.org, where today you can pick up your tickets for our Spring Outlook in conjunction with the FarmDoc team from the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. The cost is just $25 at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. And that includes a Beef House roll and coffee in the morning on Tuesday, the 8th day of March, along with the Beef House lunch. Don't miss it. Sign up right now at willag.org.